Books on Tape presents Tar Baby by Toni Morrison, read by Desiree Coleman. For it hath been declared unto me of you, my brethren, by them which are of the house of Chloe, that there are contentions among you. 1 Corinthians chapter 1, verse 11. He believed he was safe. He stood at the railing of HMS Store Königsgarten and sucked in great gulps of air, his heart pounding in sweet expectation as he stared at the harbor. Queen of France blushed a little in the lessening light and lowered her lashes before his gaze. Seven girlish white cruisers bobbed in the harbor, but a mile or so down current was a deserted pier. Carefully casual, he went below to the quarters he shared with the others, who had gone on shore leave, and since he had no things to gather, no book of postage stamps, no razor blade or key to any door, he merely folded more tightly the blanket corners under the mattress of his bunk. He took off his shoes and knotted the laces of each one through the belt hoop of his pants. Then, after a leisurely look around, he ducked through the passageway and returned to the top deck. He swung one leg over the railing, hesitated, and considered diving head first. But, trusting what his feet could tell him more than what his hands could, changed his mind and simply stepped away from the ship. The water was so soft and warm that it was up to his armpits before he realized he was in it. Quickly, he brought his knees to his chest and shot forward. He swam well. At each fourth stroke, he turned skyward and lifted his head to make sure his course was parallel to the shore, but away. Although his skin blended well with the dark waters, he was careful not to lift his arms too high above the waves. He gained on the pier and was gratified that his shoes still knocked softly against his hips. After a while, he thought it was time to head inland toward the pier. As he scissored his legs for the turn, a bracelet of water circled them and yanked him into a wide, empty tunnel. He struggled to rise out of it and was turned three times. Just before the urge to breathe water became unmanageable, he was tossed up into the velvet air and laid smoothly down on the surface of the sea. He trod water for several minutes while he regulated his breathing. Then he struck out once more for the pier. Again, the bracelet tightened around his ankles, and the wet throat swallowed him. He went down, down, and found himself not at the bottom of the sea, as he expected, but whirling in a vortex. He thought nothing except, "I am going counterclockwise." No sooner had he completed the thought than the sea flattened, and he was riding its top. Again, he trod water, coughed, spat and shook his head to free his ears of water. When he'd rested, he decided to swim butterfly and protect his feet from the sucking that had approached him both times from his right side. But when he tore open the water in front of him, he felt a gentle but firm pressure along his chest, stomach, and down his thighs. Like the hand of an insistent woman, it pushed him. He fought hard to break through, but couldn't. The hand was forcing him away from the shore. The man turned his head to see what lay behind him. All he saw was water, blood-tinted by a sun sliding into it like a fresh heart. Far away to his right was Store Königsgarten, lit fore and aft. His strength was leaving him, and he knew he should not waste it fighting the current. He decided to let it carry him for a while. Perhaps it would disappear. In any case, it would give him time to regain strength. He floated as best he could in water that heaved and pulsed in the ammonia-scented air and was getting darker all the time. He knew he was in a part of the world that had never known and would never know twilight, and that very soon he might be zooming toward the horizon in a pitch-black sea. Queen of France was already showing lights scattered like teardrops from a sky pierced to weeping by the blade tip of an early star. Still, the water lady cupped him in the palm of her hand, and nudged him out to sea. Suddenly he saw new lights, four of them, to his left. He could not judge the distance, but knew they had just been turned on aboard a small craft. Just as suddenly, the water lady removed her hand, and the man swam toward the boat anchored in blue water and not the green. As he neared it, he circled. He heard nothing and saw no one. Moving portside, he made out Seabird 2 and a 3-foot rope ladder gently tapping the bow. He grabbed a rung and hoisted himself up and aboard. Panting lightly, he padded across the deck. There was no trace of the sun, and his canvas shoes were gone. He sidled along the deck, his back against the walls of the wheelhouse, and looked into its curved windows. No one was there, but he heard music from below and smelled food cooked with a heavy dose of curry. He had nothing in mind to say if anyone suddenly appeared. It was better not to plan, not to have a ready-made story, because, however tight, prepared stories sounded most like a lie. The sex, weight, the demeanor of whomever he encountered would inform and determine his tale. He made his way aft and cautiously descended a short flight of stairs. The music was louder there, and the smell of curry stronger. The farthest door stood ajar, and from it came the light, the music, and the curry. Nearer to him were two closed doors. He chose the first. It opened into a dark closet. The man stepped into it and closed the door softly after him. It smelled heavily of citrus and oil. Nothing was clear, so he squatted where he was and listened to what seemed to be radio or record player music. Slowly he moved his hand forward in the dark and felt nothing as far as his arm could reach. Moving it to the right, he touched a wall. He duck-waddled closer to it and sank to the floor, his back against the wall. He was determined to remain alert at all costs, but the water lady brushed his eyelids with her knuckles. He dropped into sleep like a rock. The engine did not wake him. He had slept with the noise of heavier ones for years, nor did the boats list. Before the engines was the forgotten sound of a woman's voice, so new and welcoming it broke his dream life apart. He woke thinking of a short street of yellow houses with white doors, which women opened wide and called out, "Come on in here, you honey, you," their laughter sprawling like a quilt over the command. But nothing sprawled in this woman's voice. "I'm never lonely," it said. "Never." The man's scalp tingled. He licked his lips and tasted the salt caked in his mustache. "Never?" It was another woman's voice, lighter, half in doubt, half in awe. "Not at all," said the first woman. Her voice seemed warm on the inside, cold at the edges. Or was it the other way around? "I envy you," said the second voice, but it was farther away now, floating upward and accompanied by footsteps on stairs and the swish of cloth, corduroy against corduroy, or denim against denim, the sound only a woman's thighs could make. A delicious autumn invitation to come in out of the rain and curl up by the stove. The man could not hear the rest of their talk. They were topside now. He listened a while longer and then stood up slowly, carefully, and reached for the doorknob. The passageway was brightly lit, the music and curry smell gone. Through the space between door jamb and door, he saw a porthole, and in it, deep night. Something crashed to the deck, and a moment later rolled to the door saddle where it stopped in a finger of light at his foot. It was a bottle, and he could just make out Bain du Soleil on the label. He did not move. His mind was blank, but on call. He had not heard anyone descend, but now a woman's hand came into view. Beautifully shaped, pink nail polish, ivory fingers, wedding rings. She picked up the bottle, and he could hear her soft grunt as she stooped. She stood and her hand.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?